headlines this hour. Iran airs the confessions of two French spies admitting to their support for anti-government protests and regime change efforts in Iran. The leader of Palestinian group, the Islamic Jihad, says people of Palestine and its resistance forces will never surrender to Israel. And the International Monetary Fund chief downgrades economic outlook for 2023, warns global recession risks are rising. This is News. Thanks for joining us. Iran has released a video of two French spies arrested some 4 months ago, in which they've admitted to their efforts to incite chaos and unrest in the country. One of the spies has admitted to being an agent at the French Foreign Intelligence Agency, known as the General Directorate for External Security. She proceeds to explain how they brought in large sums of cash in order to fund riots and strikes, as well as purchase weaponry in an attempt to stir up chaos. She also states that their main aim was to lay the groundwork for mass unrest and trigger a revolution in Iran. The Iranian Ministry of Intelligence announced their arrests in late May. The ministry stated that they had entered the country with the aim of hijacking peaceful rallies to create social disorder. Iran says when human rights becomes a tool to exert political pressure on others, the media empire helps those accused of systematic violations to be placed in the position of claimants. Comments were made by Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani. He said the world has not yet forgotten the sad narratives of the forced separation of over 150,000 indigenous children from their families and the discovery of mass graves of hundreds of children in Canada. He said talking about other countries does not change the fact that behind the human rights showcase of one of the closest allies of the U.S. government, infanticide and disregard for humanity is displayed. Ottawa has imposed fresh sanctions on 34 Iranian individuals and entities over alleged human rights violations. Author and journalist Arnold August believes that Canada follows U.S. policies when it comes to Iran and many other countries.
The Canadian government, over the last few years, with regards to many countries, but specifically with regards to Iran, they simply use the U.S. State Department and White House talking points against Iran. So that is the pretext, that is so-called repression of women in Iran. Interesting, coming from a country, Canada, a colonial settler state that is now famous throughout the world for having committed and still commits genocide against the native peoples in our country, they are in a position, a moral position, to judge Iran with regards to the question of human rights. I mean, it is basically a regime change effort pushed forward by the United States and Canada, unfortunately, as a very close and faithful ally of the United States, is following through on it by adding these sanctions.
Iran is calling for the Caspian littoral states to create an oil and gas cooperation committee. First, Vice President Mohammad Mokhber broached the proposal during the second meeting of the Caspian Economic Forum in Moscow. Iranian officials said the Caspian Sea is a mutual heritage and a connection hub among its littoral states. He said that countries bordering the sea need to expand cooperation in various fields. The forum, initiated in 2018, is meant to act as a platform to discuss economic cooperation, transport, and security. Representatives from Russia, Turkmenistan, Kazakhstan, Azerbaijan, and Iran have attended the event. The head of the International Monetary Fund says global economy faces a gloomy picture as the IMF will downgrade its growth projections for next year.
We have downgraded three times since October last year our growth projections. Last time we brought 22 to 3.2% growth, and for 23 projections was 2.9%. We will see, we always come around the annual meetings with our World Economic Outlook, that we are further downgrading our growth projections for next year.
Kristalina Georgieva warned that recession risks across the globe are rising as a result of repeated shocks to the global economy. She urged policymakers to take concerted action to avoid a dangerous new normal. Georgieva underlined the need to stabilize the global economy by addressing the most immediate challenges, but she said the process could be painful. The IMF chief warned if central banks move too aggressively to tamp down price pressures, it could trigger a, quote, prolonged economic downturn. Soaring inflation, higher borrowing costs, and lingering supply chain disruptions have dealt a heavy blow to the global economy over the past few years. Soaring energy prices in Italy continue to bite. The Italian Retailers Association has announced that hundreds of thousands of firms are at the risk of closure next year as recession looms on the country's economic horizon.
On Wednesday, Italy's largest retailers association, Confcommercio, warned that over 120,000 small businesses risk shutting down in the first half of 2023. The association said firms are squeezed by the cost of living and skyrocketing energy prices. The president of Confcommercio, Carlo Sangalli, urged the government to do more to shield small and medium entrepreneurs, as the situation for many is now very critical.
There is the risk of a high number of business closures in the coming 9 months. Some small firms will simply find it more convenient to suspend their activity rather than losing 200 to 300 euros a day. Having said that, Italy will soon face a mild recession, which frankly is not as worrying as the media depict it.
Last month, Italy's outgoing government approved an aid package worth some 14 billion euros in an attempt to shield firms and families from surging energy costs. The measure came on top of over 50 billion euros already budgeted since January to soften the energy crisis in the country. However, the aid seems to be insufficient as an increasing number of businesses are struggling to stay afloat.
Everything costs at least 20% more. Energy prices keep soaring and it is very hard to keep going. We need help. The government must do something.
I cannot afford paying expenses for my family. I have four dependent children. They're all unemployed. Bills keep going up. How do we cope?
According to Confcommercio, more than 370,000 jobs are at risk as a result of the energy crisis. Meanwhile, energy giant Eni announced that gas supplies to Italy from Russia have resumed after 4 days. Russia's state-controlled Gazprom cut off gas supplies to Italy on Saturday, citing a problem linked to regulatory changes in Austria. Italy's national energy regulator, ARERA, warned last week that prices would climb by almost 60% by the end of the year, but experts argue that its estimate was optimistic. Bills have risen by 93% in Italy over the past 2 years, and the conflict between Russia and Ukraine, together with the damage recently sustained by Nord Stream pipelines, is likely to push costs even higher. Max Civioli, Rome.
South Korea's military says North Korea has conducted a bombing drill with at least 8 fighter jets and 4 bombers after Seoul staged a bombing drill on Thursday. North Korea's latest military exercise comes after the South reacted to Pyongyang's recent test fire ballistic missiles in the direction of Japan. Seoul said its warplanes have conducted a bombing drill, which was almost immediately responded to by Pyongyang deploying its bombers. North Korea's bombing drill dragged another formation flight of 30 South Korean fighter jets near the border. The Korean Peninsula is going through tense times, especially in the wake of the U.S. repositioning its aircraft carrier in the regional waters. Pyongyang says such moves are rehearsals for, quote, an invasion. It says the U.S. and its regional allies are threatening North Korea by conducting war games and making military buildups. Time now for the news review of this bulletin. The leader of Islamic Jihad says Palestinians are forming new equations to counter plots by the Zionist regime. On the 35th anniversary of the establishment of the Islamic Jihad, Ziad al-Nakhala said the resistance was set up to bring the, quote, message of unity against the Zionists. Nakhala said that the Zionist enemy seeks to turn the Palestinian cause into a mere humanitarian issue. He said resistance against occupation must go on in Palestine. Nakhala said that Israel enjoys full support of its allies, the U.S. in particular, But he said the resolute people of Palestine will never give in to enemy plots until the full liberation of their homeland. Our correspondent Ashraf Shannon joins us from Gaza City to tell us more about that. Barry Grossman is an international lawyer joining us from Bali in order to break this down for us a little bit. Ashraf Shannon, tell us what happened in terms of what Nakhala said, some of the highlights of his speech.
Well, Ziad Nakhala, Secretary General of Islamic Jihad, during his speech to the masses today, he talked about the importance of unity among Palestinians to resist the Israeli occupation. He also highlighted the importance of strengthening the axis of resistance, and also the importance of defending Al-Quds. He said that the fighting for Al-Quds will last as long as it takes, even if it takes 1,000 years to fight the Israeli regime. He also praised the support of the Islamic Republic of Iran, and also praised the support of Syria and the Yemeni people and the Lebanese people. He also saluted the martyrs, especially of the last Israeli onslaught during the three-day war in August, Kaveh.
Barry Grossman, this is obviously one of the resistance groups that represents what it stands for, which is against what it calls the Zionist entity or Israel. Hasn't its success in still having such a support from its own people in the Gaza Strip, for example, show that Israel has failed in trying to break up these resistance groups, the Islamic Jihad being one of them?
Absolutely, and to be clear, the strength of Islamic Jihad isn't solely in Gaza. It also has strongholds in the West Bank, and that's because from the start Islamic Jihad has stood for a very basic proposition that's very difficult to challenge, namely that Palestinians must be permitted to establish a state within the 1948 borders, and that there is no political process which can achieve that result. So the only way to achieve it is through military action or resistance. And of course, it's that position which got Islamic Jihad designated in 1987 by the United States a terrorist organization, something that was quickly followed by most Atlantic world countries. But I like to remind people that we really should evaluate these organizations by what was deemed to be acceptable and indeed even celebrated as a heroic cause during World War II. And there's nothing which Islamic Jihad promotes which is contrary to what the armed resistance throughout Europe in fighting the Nazis promoted during World War II. As for the Zionist entity, Israel, they've made it very clear that there is no political solution. There will be no negotiation except for a complete capitulation. And the U.S. has presumed to dictate to Palestinians that they're not entitled to have recourse to the usual international organizations and international law in order to resolve their differences. Instead, the machine misrepresents the position of Islamic Jihad, in part by saying, for example, that by calling for the destruction of Israel, they're in essence promoting a form of Jewish ethnic cleansing, when in fact the leadership of Islamic Jihad has made it very clear, crystal clear, that they have no problem with Jews. They're prepared to live side by side with Jews in Palestine on an equal footing, that their problem is with Zionism, with the Zionist entity, and the acts of terrorism that are being carried out by the Zionist entity against Palestinian people. That makes Islamic Jihad a very heroic cause. And to be clear, and I'll finish on this for a moment, along with other Palestinian organizations, they gave peace a chance for a decade following the Second Intifada by unilaterally abandoning tactics which led to what Israel characterized as deaths from acts of terrorism by more than 95%. There was a 95% reduction in each and every year of those 10 years across the board in fatal attacks by Palestinians on Israelis. And in return for giving peace a chance, the Zionist regime tried to push home the advantage by carrying out numerous full-fledged assaults on Gaza using the very latest military technology provided by the United States, killing tens of thousands of people and destroying many more tens of thousands of homes and other infrastructure. So everyone has made it very clear that the only thing the Palestinians can do is do what the resistance movements did in Europe to fight the Nazi during World War II, which is exercise their lawful right to armed resistance.
Well,
and that's
there.
What
sure.
Islamic Jihad stands for.
Thank you very much for that, Barry Grossman, international lawyer from Bali, Indonesia. Ashraf Shannon, thank you so much, of course, one there from Gaza City. And with that, we come to the end for this edition of the News Review. Thanks for tuning in.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
Former U.S. President Donald Trump is suing CNN for defamation, claiming the cable television network has harmed his reputation with false defamatory and inflammatory reporting and harmed his political career. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. The website of NBC News has more on this story. Former President Donald Trump sued CNN, alleging defamation on Monday, 3rd of October, accusing the news network of taking persistent actions aimed at defeating him politically. According to a lawsuit filed in the U.S. District Court for Southern Florida, Donald Trump alleged CNN has maliciously made false and defamatory statements about him. He is seeking $475 million in punitive damages, as well as compensatory damages, to be determined at trial. Beyond simply highlighting any negative information about the plaintiff and ignoring all positive information about him, CNN has sought to use its massive influence, purportedly as a trusted news source, to defame the plaintiff in the minds of its viewers and readers, for the purpose of defeating him politically. Trump lawyers Lindsay Halligan and James Trusty wrote in the 29-page complaint. CNN's campaign of dissuasion in the form of libel and slander against the plaintiff has only escalated in recent months as CNN fears the plaintiff will run for president in 2024, they added. Donald Trump hasn't said yet whether he will run for president again. Trump's lawyers alleged in the lawsuit that CNN has used both false and defamatory labels against the former president, including racist, Russian lackey, and insurrectionist. His attorneys also referred to what they said was CNN's persistent association of the plaintiff to Adolf Hitler and Nazism. According to the lawsuit, CNN refused Donald Trump's request in July to retract 34 articles and TV segments he considered defamatory, and wouldn't comply with demands that it stop referring to his false claims about the outcome of the 2020 presidential election as lies. Trump's lawyers argued that using the term big lie in relation to Donald Trump was part of a deliberate effort by CNN to propagate to its audience an association between the plaintiff and one of the most repugnant figures in modern history, namely Adolf Hitler. CBS News has also covered the same story. Former President Donald Trump is suing CNN for defamation and asking for compensatory damages in excess of $75,000 and punitive damages of $475 million, according to a lawsuit filed on Monday, 3rd of October. He is claiming that the cable news giant has harmed his reputation with false, defamatory and inflammatory mischaracterizations of him, and that CNN's conduct is intended to interfere with his political career. In particular, Donald Trump argues that he's entitled to hundreds of millions of dollars in punitive damages because of CNN's use of the term the big lie to describe Trump's stated concerns about the integrity of the election process for the 2020 presidential election. Trump's lawyers say that the big lie is a direct reference to a tactic employed by Adolf Hitler and appearing in Hitler's book Mein Kampf. If you tell a big lie enough and keep repeating it, people will eventually come to believe it, Trump's lawyers stated, noting it was used by Hitler to generate hatred against Jews and to justify their genocide. The lawsuit says CNN's campaign of dissuasion in the form of libel and slander against Donald Trump has only escalated in recent months as CNN fears he will run for president in 2024. The former president has been claiming since November of 2020 that the election was rigged, despite dozens of lawsuits and recounts that found it was not. He is being investigated by Congress and the U.S. government for trying to overturn the election results, and 2 years later, he still claims that he won the 2020 presidential election. The case has been assigned to Trump-appointed judge Raj Singhal in the Southern District of Florida. Britain's Guardian newspaper tells us more about the same story. Donald Trump has sued cable television network CNN, claiming defamation and seeking punitive damages of $475 million, according to a Florida court filing on Monday, 3rd of October. The U.S. cable news station has attempted to smear the former U.S. president with a series of ever more scandalous, false and defamatory labels of racist, Russian lackey, insurrectionist, and ultimately Hitler, Trump's lawyers claimed. The lawsuit has been filed in federal court in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Beyond simply highlighting any negative information about the plaintiff and ignoring all positive information about him, CNN has sought to use its massive influence, purportedly as a trusted news source, to defame the plaintiff in the minds of its viewers and readers, for the purpose of defeating him politically, the court filing states. Donald Trump claimed that CNN has used its considerable influence as a leading news organization to defeat him politically. Trump, a Republican, claims in the 29-page lawsuit that CNN had a long track record of criticizing him, but had ramped up its attacks in recent months because the network feared that he would run again for president in 2024. As a part of its concerted effort to tilt the political balance to the left, CNN has tried to taint the plaintiff, the lawsuit says. The lawsuit lists several instances in which CNN appeared to compare Donald Trump to Adolf Hitler, including a January 2022 special report by CNN host Fareed Zakaria that included footage of the 20th century German dictator. Trump, who in 2020 lost the re-election effort to Democrat Joe Biden, has not said officially whether he will seek re-election again in 2024, though he has dropped many such hints. The lawsuit comes as the 76-year-old former president faces considerable legal woes, including a criminal investigation by the U.S. Department of Justice for retaining government records at his Mar-a-Lago estate in Florida after leaving office in January of 2021. Donald Trump was sued last month by the New York State Attorney General Letitia James, who has accused him of lying to banks and insurers about the value of his assets. And a congressional committee and the Department of Justice are separately investigating last year's 6th of January 2021 assault on the U.S. Capitol by Trump supporters.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladheena amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now we will listen to the speech of Sheikh Osama Abdul Ghani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear brothers and sisters in Islam, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Tonight's lesson, brothers and sisters, is called Willing Surrender to God. Willing surrender to Allah. If we can adopt this principle, the idea is, brothers and sisters, that not only will we end global suffering, because again, the Imam of the time is waiting for our hearts to change. Tonight's discussion, a lot of tonight's discussion is about the state of the heart. It does have a practical application, willing surrender to God. It's going to demonstrate itself in our actions. But part of it, brothers and sisters, is that surrender in the heart, that changing of the heart, getting closer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So one part of it has those global applications, the social political applications. The other part of it is us experiencing God's best. If this principle can be adopted, our marriages will flourish. Willing surrender to Allah. What's the effect that it has on a marriage? Instead of surviving a marriage, we'll thrive, we'll flourish. It won't be like that story I heard. And inshallah, these stories aren't true. Let's go over some of the verses of the Quran. I'd like to mention the verses and the name, the numbers of the verses so we can look at these ayat later. I'm hoping, brothers and sisters, that since these are pretty simple verses, later on we examine them and we examine the Arabic that's being used. These conditions that are being mentioned, when I'm talking about willing surrender to God, this is a condition of faith, brothers and sisters. And of course, I address myself first. So the first verse is Surah 33 and verse number 36. Let's pay attention to the Arabic. Allah says this in the Quran. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. وما كان لمؤمن ولا مؤمنة. It is not for a mu'min or a mu'mina. Not a mu'min or mu'mina. إذا قضى الله ورسوله أمرا. When Allah and His Messenger, the Rasul, have decided something, أن يكون لهم الخيرة من أمرهم, that they have any choice in the matter. The mu'min or mu'mina, God says, once God has made a decision, no choice in their own affairs. God spoken, done. Mu'min or mu'mina, the Arabic of it, brothers and sisters, is very important. Iman is what we're talking about. The wilayah of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala sitting in our hearts, readying ourselves for our imam, shortening the occultation. Next verse. Again, the Arabic of it is important. Surah 4, verse number 65. God says this in the Quran. Fala wa rabbika. Allah swears by Himself, by your Lord, la yu'minun. They do not believe. States of the heart. Let's listen to this, brothers and sisters. States of the heart. Hatta yuhakkimuka fima shajara baynahum. Until they make you, the prophet, be a judge in the disputes that they have amongst them. A mu'min or mu'mina or two of the mu'mineen, they have a dispute amongst them. They're not agreeing on something. Emotions are running high. Do I, as a believer, make Allah and His Messenger the judge? They make them the judge. So until then, la yu'minun. God swears by Himself, la yu'minun. Then after that, God says something else that's very important. Thumma, la yajidu fi anfusihim harajan mimma qadait. After that, once God has spoken, once the Rasul has made a decision, they don't find even in their heart of hearts a little difficulty. I'm not comfortable with the decision of Allah and the Rasul. Allah continues, wa yusallimu taslima. After that, they submit, a thorough submitting. So what have we learned so far? Willing surrender. Wa yusallimu taslim, ayat of Quran, is a condition of iman. The wilayah of God, the wilayah of the imam in my heart, is it real? Am I part of one of the problems or part of the solution? What does God think? The Quran gives us three reasons in Surah Nur why a person wouldn't do this. The opposite of this is that I pick and choose with Islam. I have some parts of Islam that I like. My favorite parts of Islam, those are great. Sadaqallahu al-aliyyul azim. And then other parts of Islam, no, I'm not quite that comfortable with them. God, I'm going to give you the verses. Surah Nur, if you can, I'm going to only mention one of the verses. I'm going to mention why the three reasons why someone would pick and choose. Otherwise, the verse mentions that there are a group of people when they're told to come to Allah, if they think it's on in their favor, Islam is on my side, they come rushing over, Ya Rasulullah, what does Islam say? But the same prophet, when he's going to say what Islam says, but it's not in my personal interest, then now the person turns away. God says that these people are not mu'mineen. Why do they doubt? Why would this happen? God mentions three reasons. So Surah 24 and verse number 50 is what I'm mentioning now. Those previous verses are the ones that talk about this group of people who are picking and choosing when Islam is not a buffet. We don't get to have our favorite parts of Islam. وَيُسَلِّمُ تَسْلِيمًا, we learned in the previous verse. Why would a person pick and choose? Why not have the heart submit thoroughly to Allah and His Messenger? God says the first reason. أَفِي قُلُوبِهِمْ مَرَضٌ. Is it sickness in the heart? The heart's diseased. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has spoken, and the person still in their heart of hearts is rebelling, not happy, uncomfortable. I don't like what Allah and the Messenger have said. In my heart of hearts, is there marav, sickness? Number two, amirtabu. Or maybe worse, maybe the person's doubted. Maybe they're not sure if this is all from Allah. Because otherwise it would seem pretty simple. Once I have intellectual conviction, once I know Islam means submission and obedience, then after that, what difference does it make what God says? Whatever He says, that's the way it should be. The Quran mentions an even more dangerous reason. This one's going to let us know that if somebody does pick and choose with Islam, that person is mean and a bully. If somebody picks and chooses, I know God said this, Allah spoke, and I'm still stubbornly. Ayat of Quran. It says, أَمْ يَخَافُونَ أَنْ يَحِيفَ اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِمْ وَرَسُولُهُ. Or is the person afraid Allah will do dhulm to them and the Messenger? If I obey Allah, I'll lose. Dhulm. Good guys finish last. I've got to watch out. I've got to have my own back. If somebody's like that, I'm picking and choosing because I think if I obey Allah, Allah will do dhulm. The Quran speaks, بَلْ أُولَٰئِكَ هُمُ الظَّالِمُونَ. You better watch out for those people. They're zalim, mean and a bully. Sometimes somebody will practice certain parts of Islam, very strong on certain rituals, but the same God who said do this is saying don't do that.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
روحي كريم عظيم عليم حالي حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. I IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The Mar-a-Lago resort and its owner, former U.S. President Donald Trump, have become one of the biggest concerns of the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency, CIA, with FBI agents raiding the Trump resort in Florida, known as Mar-a-Lago, to discover and seize confidential documents that Trump took with him after leaving the White House. This home and its owner became one of the biggest challenges and security concerns for the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency. The 114-room house is currently the focus of a U.S. Justice Department's investigation into Trump's illegal seizure of presidential documents. Experts believe that the stealing and archiving confidential and national information of the U.S. government by Trump can be seen as an obstacle for him being approved as a candidate in the next U.S. presidential election and even create complex legal problems and challenges for him. Concerning this issue, we have taken a look at some world press and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Reuters news agency explains more about this big scandal in U.S. intelligence community. It says, some security experts warn the seizure of classified U.S. government documents from Donald Trump's sprawling Mar-a-Lago retreat spotlights the ongoing national security concerns presented by the former president and the home he dubbed the Winter White House. A search warrant shows Trump is under federal investigation for possible violations of the Espionage Act, which makes it unlawful to spy for another country to mishandle U.S. defense information, including sharing it with people not authorized to receive it. Former DOJ official Mary McCord said the Justice Department's search warrant raises concerns about national security. McCord said clearly they thought it was very serious to get these materials back into secured space, adding even just retention of highly classified documents in improper storage, particularly given Mar-a-Lago the foreign visitors there and others who might have connections with foreign governments and foreign agents, creates a significant national security threat. Trump, in a statement on his social media platform, claimed the records were all declassified and placed in secure storage. However, McCord said she saw no plausible argument that he had made a conscious decision about each one of these to declassify them before he left. She said after leaving office, he did not have the power to declassify information. Bloomberg News reported U.S. federal prosecutors are likely to wait until after the November election to announce any charges against Donald Trump if they determine he broke laws. The unprecedented prospect of bringing charges against a former U.S. president is creating intense scrutiny of the Justice Department in the aftermath of its search of his home at Mar-a-Lago. A separate DOJ probe is focused on his effort to overturn the 2020 election, which he lost to President Joe Biden. Under long-standing department policy, prosecutors are barred from taking investigative steps or filing charges for the purpose of affecting an election or helping a candidate or party, traditionally 60 days before an election. This year, that would be by September 15th, which makes it unlikely anything would be announced until after November 8th. The FBI executed a search warrant on Trump's home on August 8th when agents removed 20 boxes of material containing 11 sets of classified material. Announcing charges against Trump prior to the election likely would be seen as a political ploy by his supporters to damage him and his endorsed candidates and could fuel unrest in the country. For example, South Carolina Republican Senator Lindsey Graham recently warned during an interview on Fox News, "There literally will be riots in the street if Trump is indicted for mishandling classified information." Trump immediately posted the clip to his social media site. The British daily The Guardian in an article sheds more light on the issue, saying on August 8, when dozens of FBI agents fanned through Mar-a-Lago bearing a search warrant issued by a federal judge, Trump lashed out. He said, "These are dark times for our nation," describing the legally authorized search as a raid and portraying it as a blatantly political attack akin to one of those broken third world countries. Over the past 4 weeks, a cascade of information has been released that tells the other side of the story. It transpires that the unprecedented nature of the FBI search was posited on even more unprecedented behavior of the 45th president of the United States. Trump has been archivally challenged to coin a phrase for many years. The roots of his refusal to abide by normal rules relating to documents stretch back at least to his refusal to disclose his own tax returns during the 2016 presidential campaign, a resistance to accepting public access to his personal papers that is the mirror image of his current claim that presidential records from his time in the White House belong to him. Ruth Ben Gitt, a New York University history professor who is author of Strong Men, Mussolini to the Present, and publisher of the Lucid newsletter about threats to democracy, says this blurring of public and private is central to his autocratic style of leadership. Ben Gitt said, "For Trump, records are not just documents. They are a measure of control, leverage over enemies and over his inner circle. This kind of leader doesn't recognize the division between public and private. They have a propriety mode of exercising power in which everything is theirs." By June 2018, such propriety behavior was expressing itself in the White House. Politico reported that Trump was routinely tearing up official records rather than filing them for safekeeping in the National Archives, as he was legally obliged to do. The U.S. government says it is in possession of evidence showing that former President Donald Trump's team tried to obstruct a probe into the discovery of classified documents at the former president's residence. The Justice Department says it had evidence that classified documents were deliberately concealed from the FBI when it tried to retrieve them in June from Trump's Florida estate, prompting an unprecedented search of his home. Prosecutors laid out their evidence of obstruction of justice, saying that Trump aides both falsely certified in June that the former president had retained all the government records he had stored in his home after leaving the White House in January 2021. It also revealed that Trump lawyers explicitly prohibited government personnel from opening or looking inside any of the boxes inside the storage room when FBI agents first traveled to his Palm Beach Mar-a-Lago resort in June to retrieve the records. After the FBI's raid on the Trump's resort, many supporters in some American cities gathered in front of FBI's headquarters to express their protest and demand the dissolution of this institution. Rudy Giuliani, the former mayor of New York and one of Trump's friends and lawyers, also said in an interview with the New York Post that if Trump wins the 2024 election, he will attack Joe Biden's house. While calling the FBI's attack on Trump's home in Florida political, he said if Trump wins the election, he will use the FBI to retaliate and attack Biden's house. Therefore, it can be said that considering the recent scandals in Trump's Mar-a-Lago house and the intelligence disorders inside the former U.S. administration, there is no clear future for Trump to become a candidate and win the 2024 elections. It can also be said that these events will have important effects on the incoming U.S. midterm elections.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is Taqwa, Thursday the 2nd of Ramadan, 1394, 19 September, 1974. One of the marks of Taqwa is to spend in the good times and the bad, and suppress their anger, كَالِمِينَ الْغَيْضِ They do not forget, they restrain their anger and displeasure. It is only when a person holds their anger in check that they can, with reason and understanding, do what is correct. And excuse people. وَلَعَافِينَ عَنِ النَّاسِ They forgive others for their faults and their mistakes. They overlook people's misdeeds. Of course, this is where people perform these by accident rather than by intent. The same is true of God. He overlooks mistakes. When someone does something evil by intent, this should not be overlooked. However, we should forgive the mistakes that all people make and excuse their flaws, and excuse people, and God loves the virtuous. What are the other marks of taqwa? And those who, when they commit an indecent act or wrong themselves, immediately remember Allah and plead for forgiveness for their sins. The Quran, Surah 3, verse 135. They do not remain beneath the veil of heedlessness for long.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
There is a very strange verse in the Quran about the people of taqwa and the act of remembering God, tadhakkur. It reads, when those who are God-wary are touched by a group from shaitan, they remember Allah and behold, they perceive. The Quran, Surah 7, verse 201. Here the Arabic word shaitan is used in its broadest possible sense, meaning a group of devils or people with devil-like qualities. When one who has taqwa is afflicted by such a group, and they surround him to try and lead him astray, separate him from the right path, and make him forget Allah, they remember Allah immediately. And the remembrance of Allah is an escape from the clutches of shaitan. The remembrance of Allah is a rope we hold in our hands, which can save us from the traps laid for us by our ever-watchful foes. Therefore, the remembrance of Allah is something truly precious to which we should hold fast. They remember God. Just as they do something wrong or wrong themselves, they remember God and plead for forgiveness for their sins. In other words, they hasten to find a way to efface the sin and to heal the wound it has created in their soul.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.